America.
Get the Berkey Light, the American water purifier, only 200.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need reminds of the views that are expressed here and not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and, well, right now they're going to be the views of Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and he'll be with us the next hour. He's taught at the university level. He's testified before Congress. He's worked as a researcher and now an analysis of what's going on. He's certainly has written extensively. We do carry those books that are still in print. So without further ado, Dr. Dennis Cuddy, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, where do we go from here? Are we going to talk about your latest article up there on News with Views?
Sure, the Power Elite and the Secret Nazi Plan, Part 2.
All right, fine. Let's go for it.
Well, as usual, I begin with a note regarding contemporary events, which I guess I'll lead in with that and then get to the main body. As your listeners know, I often talk about this group I call the Power Elite, and people all across the U.S., of course, question whether there really is something to that effect, a Power Elite that facilitates global events, sort of the secret hand behind various activities. And my response is, this is what I would say to a person. I would say, if a former chief of special operations, clandestine activities for the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, says there's a secret team that controls the U.S. and the world, if that's what that person says, why is it so hard to believe that there's a Power Elite acting similarly? And of course, I'm referring to L. Fletcher Prouty, who was a former special ops chief for the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, and his book titled The Secret Team, the CIA and its Allies in Control of the United States and the World. And he basically indicated there was this secret team consisting of security-cleared individuals in and out of government. That's important, not just in government, but out of government. And these people, even those out of government, receive secret intelligence data from the CIA and National Security Agency, and they literally, as he went on to say, can choose to topple governments or create governments and so forth. So what I try to do is not just indicate, well, I have this information which makes me believe there's this Power Elite, but you have people who have some respect, and they've authored books, and they've been on the inside, and they would use language just like Fletcher Prouty used. Now, continuing the parade, as I call it, of Clinton administration Rhodes Scholars, and I've already indicated in the past the number of Rhodes Scholars, especially in the area of foreign affairs, that have been appointed by President Obama. The newest one, I think, is Ashton Carter. He has been named an Undersecretary of Defense. And also, I write that Obama's, quote, con, like a con job, like a confidence man, or a scam, if you want to call it that, regarding taxes, continues as well. And I just want to touch on that because the economy is still on the minds of many people. And what I say there is the idea of taxing only those earning over $250,000 per year will not negatively affect all of us is ridiculous. And I won't go through a lot of this because I touched on it in the last program. But basically, if you have small businesses, a lot of small businesses, five or six workers, they file under that same provision of the tax code that individuals file if they earn over $250,000. As I can see it, there's only three possibilities. They absorb the tax increase themselves, and that could cause them to go off out of business if they're operating just with marginal profit, or they can cut costs, Usually they do that by laying off workers or cutting the workers' hours or wages, or thirdly, they pass the increase along to the consumers. As I said last time, in
hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. And our guest this afternoon is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, who, of course, worked with the Reagan administration, the Department of Education, and testified before Congress. He's actually done a lot of research for various corporations, analysis of what's going on. Certainly one of my favorite guests. And he's talking today about the secret team. And secret team that runs our government, he was referring to as Fletcher Prouty, Colonel Fletcher Prouty's a book he wrote called The Secret Team. Actually, I have one-hour interviews with Fletcher Prouty, who had been retired, but he had been chief of staff, or the joint chiefs of staff liaison to the CIA when he worked there in the Pentagon. And he understood that there really is a small group of people who run our country and in and out of government. But, of course, it makes, of course, mockery of this idea that we elect our president. No, they give us two candidates, and which one do you want? And, of course, that's how they work it. And of course, most people really think they're going to make a difference, and they go to the conventions, and they have their balloons and their hats, and they make a lot of noise and applaud, and it's all showbiz. Well, the reality is, of course, that the people in charge have a different agenda, a different worldview, and, of course, many of them have an intense hatred of our country and are using the financial and military of our government to bring about this world government, because that's where their real loyalty lies. But you pick up the story there, Dennis?
Sure, and just to reiterate, the key elements of that is this isn't just, you know, some Army sergeant who has an opinion. This is the person who was former chief of special ops. That's clandestine activities for the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And he uses the words in his book title, The Secret Team, the CIA and its allies in control of, not just influence, not just have an impact, but in control of the United States and the world. I mean, that's a very specific term, control of the United States and the world, where he's talking about, as I said, not only these individuals in government. I mean, you would expect to have security clearance to people within the CIA, but he says also out of government. And they receive this data from the CIA and the NSA, and he says the concluding thing here is the secret team has very close affiliations with elements of power in more than 70 foreign countries, that's over 60 countries, and is able to, when it chooses, just when it chooses, not, you know, when the circumstances permit. He says, when it chooses to topple governments, to create governments, and to influence governments almost anywhere in the free world, end quote.
We'll be back in just a moment here with our special guest, Dr. Dennis Cuddy. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Chris Dennis was just talking about Fletcher Prouty's analysis of what was going on. I interviewed Colonel Fletcher Prouty before he passed away. He was in charge of special ops for the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And as he said, you know, there's a small group of people that have interlocked with people in governments throughout the world, about 60 governments, and they can topple any government anytime they want, and they can put people into government. And of course, this is very much backed up by my interviews with John Perkins, who was recruited into this dark side of government. If you haven't read his book, The Confessions of an Economic Hitman, or heard our interviews with him on our 4 tape sets of The Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and he quite forward, you know, if somebody gets in the way, they won't do what they're supposed to. They just have them killed. They'll have a revolution. They'll try to buy them off. You know, they don't just want to go out and do this. But if the person just is unreasonable, he really believes in this country, he wants to do what's right, they just have him killed. Now, you have to understand, this is not our government, the government that you and I love and respect. This is an invisible government that has taken over control. And it works through the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, and the Trilateral Commission, less than 5,000 people, who interlock with the centers of power in banking and commerce, certainly in the great tax exempt foundations and education and the media. And they literally mold our minds and shape our thoughts and tastes. You go right ahead, Dr. Cuddy.
Okay, and the second thing of my introductory note had to do with the economy. And as I mentioned, just in one sentence, I'm trying to monitor the number of Rhodes Scholars that President Obama appoints, and the latest one I mentioned was Ashton Carter as Undersecretary of Defense. They usually hold these very important key positions, just like they did under Clinton. And the point about the economy was over and over again, in fact, one of the main reasons, I think, that Obama was elected was this constant almost mantra that if you earn under $250,000 a year, you're okay. Only those over $250,000 will have a tax increase, as though, you know, that's where we're going to be able to get enough money to pay for a new health care system and so on. But the point is, for those small businesses that really the heart of the American economy, most of the jobs come from them, if they may have five or six workers and they choose to file under that particular tax provision as an individual, there's really only three choices. They can absorb the taxes themselves, and that may cause them to go out of business. They can cut costs by laying off workers or cutting hours of workers. Or three, pass along the increase to consumers. Now, in hard economic times, they're going to be reluctant to do number three, pass it along to the consumers. But that would mean number two would be the preferred option, and that would increase unemployment. Now, if you press them on that, the Obama people, Gibbs, the press secretary, and so on, say what they would say is, well, what we hope is that by the time these new tax provisions kick in 2010, the economy will have turned around and so forth. Well, it still leaves the three choices. For those over $250,000, those are the three choices. And so even if the economy did turn around, what you have is that option number three would be preferred. And what that would mean is they'd pass along this tax increase to the consumer, which will, of course, mean inflation, maybe even hyperinflation. So that's why I call this an Obama con or an Obama scam, because all of us are going to feel the effect of either increased unemployment in the short term or higher prices passed along as inflation in the long term.
Well, I think even more frightening than that is the fact that you remember when they put in the alternative minimum tax, and they sold this to the American people about those terrible rich people who weren't paying their fair share, and so we're going to get those bad rich guys. You're going to put in an alternative minimum tax, and then by the process of inflation, pretty soon most of the people in the middle class were paying the alternative minimum tax. And the politicians said, oh, gee, we don't know how that happened. That was just for the rich people. Well, we don't know how to get rid of it, you know. Well, I think they're going to do away with it this time, but it's been around for a long time. A lot of people have got stuck because of inflation, paying the tax on the rich people. And, of course, I will point out that we are certainly going to have inflation. You can't suddenly create $11, $12, $20 trillion, which is what they're doing. They've already pledged over $11 trillion that we don't have in order to try to bail out this banking situation. We're going to have inflation down the line. And, ladies and gentlemen out there in the audience, pretty soon you're going to be rich. You're going to be making over $250,000, most of you. Of course, a hamburger may very well cost, you know, $15 or $20. But then you'll get to pay just like those other rich people. But they never mention this possibility. Have you noticed that, Dennis? They never talk about how inflation is going to eventually raise all of our salaries to that range. But they can't let the American people know that there really is just a facade for a tax increase on the middle class to destroy them.
And that's the goal. As I've said many times before, this is a hit on the middle class by design to return us to the old feudal days where you had the elite at the top and the worker bees. They called them back then serfs and peasants and so forth at the time. But that's what they want to return to. It won't just be a moneyed elite. They will be working in cooperation with a technical elite. It will be through technological innovations that they use to manipulate things and control the people and so on. But if you look at the situation now, the people who earn as individuals over $250,000 a year are already paying a tremendously high proportion of the taxes anyway. And so there's only so much you can sort of wring out of those turnips or whatever you want to call them at the top. And so with his grand design of a national health insurance program, a triple-funded education initiative, and all of these things, there's no way that they're going to be able to increase the percentage of taxes on those earning over $250,000 to pay for all that unless, as Dr. Stan says, their plan is to bump, you know, half of the population or so forth through inflation up over that.
And of course, the other thing is, of course, as they do that, it'll cut back on charitable contributions, because right. what it does is it cuts back on of course, charitable contributions for those people making over $250,000, plus bumping their tax up to, I think, 39. That's just the federal tax. Then you got your state tax. That's another 10%. You're already putting out over 10%. Then, of course, you got the sales tax and the gasoline tax and all the other taxes. And pretty soon it gets like the little red hen, you know, and why should I bother to work when everybody else is getting the benefit from it? And believe me, the really rich people like Mr. Geithner, you know, our undersecretary, our new secretary of the Treasury, he just didn't bother to pay his taxes. And the really rich don't, and they don't go after them. It's just as common people that they really want to make their lives miserable on. You have a two-tiered standard, one for the invisible government, one for the visible government. And here's Tom Daschle, a former Speaker of the Senate, and of course he's getting $100,000, he's making $5 million in a couple of years as a lobbyist. And Mr. Obama says, President Obama says, oh, we can't have lobbyists. And he wants to bring in this guy who's made $5 million in a couple of years and have gotten a private car and private chauffeur all provided. I mean, how many people listening to this program have a private car and a private chauffeur supplied, you know, along with their job? And he just didn't bother to pay any taxes on that. He said, oh, shucks, I didn't know I had to pay taxes on all the things that they gave me, all the benefits. Well, here's a man who's been, you know, the Speaker of the United States Senate, and he doesn't understand our tax system. Go right ahead.
No, I guess he never watched with The Price is Right or one of those game shows, you know, where if you win a mink coat, you're responsible for paying taxes. I remember that was just a quick aside. There was an old Andy Griffith program about 50 years ago where Aunt B, you know, got out to Hollywood and won something on the game show. Next thing you know, the fellow who would be the future chaplain on the series MASH shows up as the IRS guy saying, okay, $3,000 in taxes on this. So apparently Tom Daschle never saw stuff like that. So he didn't know that he'd have to pay on things such as that, gift services and whatever given to him.
Well, incidentally, we have up on our website under our special other videos, we have an interview with Senator Reid, the Speaker of the Senate at the present time, and he was insisting that our income tax was entirely voluntary. Nobody has to pay it. It's all voluntary. The fellow's exasperated. How could you say that, Senator? Well, of course, everybody knows that tax is voluntary, but they put you in jail. Oh, no, it's a voluntary tax. Is this man really serious? You actually have to see that. It's on our website, RadioLiberty.com. You wonder if these people really think the word that dumb? I think
yeah.
they probably do. And of course, they have total disdain for us common people. Go right ahead.
Well, I'm afraid they may have a point with the way I look at some of these TV shows. Well, anyway, in terms of, like you were saying, it's not just the federal tax. When you get to at the state level, a lot of programs at the state level, let's say education, are funded by property taxes. Okay, there, right there, you've got a sort of catch-22. Because if the property values are greatly lowered, they're going to get less taxes, right, with this economy and mortgages and housing prices falling. But if they don't lower the property taxes, then that's going to hit an even a bigger crunch on homeowners as well. So the homeowners at the state level are also probably going to be hit by some sort of tax increase. So the feds is just one aspect of this debacle. This anyway, I call this Obama-con or Obama scam, whatever you want to call it, because it's terribly, terribly disingenuous what he's saying. And the press, of course, is in league with him. They're letting him get away with this stuff. Now, to the main body of this, the Paralete and the secret Nazi plan, in part one of the series, I had mentioned the importance of I.G. Farben. And in fact, after World War II, the U.S. War Department conducted an investigation, and they actually produced a document that revealed, quote, without I.G., that's Farben's, immense productive facilities, its intense research and vast affiliations, Germany's prosecution of the war would have been unthinkable and impossible, end quote. I think I hear the music.
You do hear the music? We go right ahead. I'll tell you when to stop.
Okay, well, and how was IG Farben able then to have, quote, immense productive facilities? I asked that question. Well, a great deal of Farben's expansion prior to World War II was paid for by funds from Rockefeller's National City Bank, J.P. Morgan's Equitable Trust Company, a company called Harris
Horton. Hold that. It's the best enemies money can buy. Well, Dr. Cuddy was just talking about, of course, how that I.G. Farben was one of the major forces, I.G. Farben, a chemical company, major forces behind Adolf Hitler. But, of course, he never could have done these things had it not been for the fact that Standard Oil and the major American banks funded I.G. Farben. The Rockefellers funded I.G. Farben, American the banks associated with the Rockefellers funding I.G. Farben before the war. But not only that, but we had General Motors over there. We had GE was over there, International Telephone and Telegraph. I think that either Dow Chemical or one of the other large chemical. Yeah, but until people understand that it was these American corporations that built the war materials. In fact, anybody in the listening audience, if you get anything else from us, ask for a copy of the letter from Ambassador Dodd. And I actually found this when I was going through Colonel House's papers back in 1980. But it was a letter written in 1936 from the American ambassador to Germany at that time, Ambassador William Dodd, and he's writing to Colonel House, and he's saying, why are American corporations, you know, building up the war-making capacity of the Germans, building the weapons for them? Nobody here wants a war, and yet everybody's preparing for war. I mean, certainly the American corporations that are building all of this war material from the Germans can't get any money out of the country because of, there's certainly provisions in the law that don't let them take any money out. Do the stockholders back home realize, of course, that they're building the weapons for the Germans, you know, in preparation for obviously a war? I mean, somebody ought to be concerned about the, you know, terrible thing that's happening. It's an amazing letter, but the sort of thing that you're never going to hear about on ABC, CBS. We can never let the American people know that we build up Adolf Hitler just as we're building up the communists in China today, the best enemies money can buy in preparation for the coming war.
Right, and in part one of this series that I'm on, part two now, I put that quote by Dodd and then mentioned how in 1942 the companies ITT and so forth, Sosthenes, Bain, and the head of that, and the Ford Motor Company and so forth, were still, even after we'd entered the war, doing nice things for the Nazis so they could make better bombs and so forth to kill us. And in this case, IG Farben was paid for by, as Dr. Stan just said, Rockefeller entities like National City Bank. Another Rockefeller company was Dillon Reed and Company. They were funding Farben, as well as J.P. Morgan's Equitable Trust and a separate entity called Harris Forbes and Company. Hitler received his funds to a large extent, not exclusively, to a large extent via the August Thyssen Bank, T-H-Y-S-S-E-N Bank, which was affiliated with the Harrimans, Averill and so forth, Harriman of Skull and Bones in the U.S. They were Skull and Bones members the same year as Prescott Bush. That's the current president's grandfather, Prescott Sheldon Bush, in the U.S. Their company here was the Union Banking Corporation of New York. It was a joint Thyssen-Harriman operation. And according to Anthony Sutton, meaning a joint, it actually had four directors who were members of the same Skull and Bones cell. That's the D as in David, 115 cell, the D-115 cell, as well as two Nazi directors, Johann Groninger and H.J. Kaldenhoven. So that's what he means by a joint venture. So this was not something, you know, ooh, wow, golly, you know.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, Dr. Cuddy was just pointing out the fact that certainly American corporations and American banks were building up Adolf Hitler prior to the Second World War, just exactly as we're building up communist China in both instances in preparation for the coming war. But we can't let the American people know that. I mean, why do you think we've transferred so much of our manufacturing to communist China? Why do you think that we actually give the corporations that move over there don't have to pay any taxes, and then they can, of course, build the products there, you know, with slave labor and bring them in here without any tariffs at all. Why do you think we actively encouraged over, well, we used to do 50% of the production of the world. Now we do about 11%. It's all part of a long-range plan to redistribute the wealth of the American people and our manufacturing and eventually to impoverish the American people. But I believe the war is coming because just exactly as we built off Adolf Hitler, why, of course, we're building up the communist China and, of course, Russia today. But we can't let the American people know that. And I simply point out, who drilled the oil wells for Russia that gave them the money? Who built the pipelines? If you haven't seen our little pamphlet, the Communist Capitalist Alliance. That's the Communist Capitalist Alliance. It's an inexpensive little pamphlet. You need to read it, and you need to weep for all the boys that are going to die in another senseless war. Go right ahead, Dr. Cuddy.
This transfer of money is continued unabated. I mean, just as an aside, after the war, I put in at least one or two of my books the speech that JFK, John F. Kennedy, made as president in the early 60s, basically saying how proud he was that we had had just too much gold, and so he gave it away. He dispersed it, and he said, now we're down to about 20% of the gold that we had. And he's, smiling. This is a wonderful thing. You know, we're dispersing this way. Sort of like Obama. We're dispersing this wealth around the world. Let's spread the wealth, sort of. So anyway, that's in one aspect where some of our gold went. Not all of it. There's more to that. But Kennedy is really proud of that. You know, we have too much gold. We got to give it away. All right, so also mentioned in part one of this series I'm doing on the Parallel the Nazi Secret Plan, is I mentioned in the first part the importance of Parallel Agent John J. McCloy. So continuing with him, this was before and during the war, and I've already gotten to that in part one. But after the war, he becomes president of the World Bank in 1947 and then U.S. High Commissioner in Germany in 1949. Now, that's for a very specific reason. From that influential position, he was able to pressure West Germany and France to establish what they called at the time the European and Steel Community. And that wasn't just, let's have this little community here. The whole idea was this will be a nose in the camel's tent. I mean, the nose of the camel in your tent. So that they could make that transfer into the larger common market. And then they could use the common market to eventually wind up with the European Economic Community and the European Union. But they had to start it, and this is where it started when he pressured. I mean, the idea was John, Monnet back in the 20s. But the actual implementation of this thing, and by the way, McCloy was Monet's attorney. The implementation of this thing was right after the Second World War in 49 when they made McCloy U.S. High Commissioner in Germany.
And because then he goes on to become the President of the Council on Foreign Relations. And then, of course, after President Kennedy is shot, who do they pick to be on the Warren Commission to make sure that there's no conspiracy? Why, John McCloy, of course, who is an integral member of this whole conspiracy that killed Kennedy. We'll go right ahead.
Yeah, not to mention the Dulles, who had just gotten, Allen got kicked out of the CIA head, and one doesn't do that to the Dulleses and not, that's another story.
Well,
the European Union was the ultimate goal, and that type of regional economic arrangement was a necessary part of the Power Elite's plan to link such economic arrangements into this management structure, which would then form the basis for the world socialist government, which is their ultimate goal. Now, regarding the Nazis, not only would their ability to wage war have been impossible without fuel, as Dr. Stan had mentioned, Standard Oil and so forth, and IG Farben chemicals, rubber and so forth, but also you can't have a war such as from the Krupp, K-R-U-P-P, industries. Now, despite the fact that Alfred Krupp, who was the head of it, was tried before a Nuremberg military tribunal and found guilty as a war criminal on July 31 of 1948, and all his property was confiscated, despite that, on February 4, 1951, 2.5 years later, McCloy issues a general amnesty, plus the return of Krupp's personal fortune and corporate property. See how neat that works out? Now, following this, as Dr. Stan mentioned, McCloy, 1953, becomes chairman of the CFR, which was, as I've explained in the past, an outgrowth of the Paralite member Cecil Rhodes, quote, scheme to take the government of the whole world.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, Dr. Cuddy, go right ahead.
Okay. Well, I mentioned how McCloy and 1953, after, you know, granting general amnesty to all Nazi types, becomes chairman of the CFR, which was an outgrowth of Cecil Rhodes's secret society's plan, scheme to take the government of the whole world, is the term that Rhodes himself used. McCloy holds that CFR chairmanship until 1970, when he's followed by David Rockefeller for 15 years as chairman from 1970 to 85, and of course it was during that time that you have individuals writing articles in Foreign Affairs, like the April 1974 issue, Richard Gardner, where he's talking about eroding national sovereignty piece by piece would get them further than their old-fashioned frontal assault. So Rockefeller was chairman during that time. And then more recently, of course, we mentioned several times about David Rockefeller's quote on page 405 of his memoirs, acknowledging that he's been part of a, quote, secret cabal, working against the best interests of the United States, conspiring with others around the world to build a more integrated global political and economic structure, one world, if you will, end quote. Now, during his McCloy's tenure as a CFR chairman, 3 years into that, he wrote, quote, this is a statement by McCloy, he wrote, quote, "In my view, we must be ready to consider the most far-reaching proposals, including those for total disarmament, universal, enforceable, and complete with international controls and inspection," end quote. So with that viewpoint, what happens is President-elect Kennedy, when he comes in on January 2 of 1961, this is just before he becomes president, he said, President-elect, just before he's taking the oath, he at that time, before he becomes president, designates McCloy as his principal disarmament advisor and negotiator. And then just 9 months after that, September 25 of 1961, he's, you know, brand new president, just 8 months or so into his presidency, Kennedy addresses the UN General Assembly, proclaiming, quote, quote, "Let us join in dismantling the national capacity to wage war." You know, that includes us, too. He goes on, "The program to be presented to this assembly is for general and complete disarmament," end quote. Now, complete disarmament of the U.S. and all the other nations of the world was and is an important goal of the Powerite. You just can't have people with arms. That's not just, you know, armies, but individuals. That's why they have to, you know, chip away at the Second Amendment and our rights to bear arms. Now, concerning the secret, the Nazi secret plan mentioned earlier.
I'm going to have to interrupt you there. We're going to bring our stations back on board, and we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And certainly we hope that many of you out there will want to get his articles. You'll find them at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com. And, of course, pull them down, copy them, and put them into a book and go through them. Tremendous amount of information. It's all indexed. You can find out where these references are coming from. Well, basically, of course, Dennis was talking about the Nazi secret plan. The Nazis did have a secret plan, and it was made up even before the war was even halfway fought. They were already planning what was going to happen after they lost the war. So you go ahead and pick the story up there, Dennis.
Right. Concerning that secret plan, which I talked about in part one of the series, A Plan for a Loss, by the late 60s, of course, they had had time to have their agents, this would be Nazi agents, would go into two successive countries, like they would go to Switzerland and then France or wherever it was. So they had time for these agents to go into two successive countries and rise to positions of power in the world. And one example I give of this this possibility is Nazi secret agent Paul Dickoff. That's D-I-C-K-O-P as in Peter, F as in Frank. He had left Switzerland by this time and had gone to France and had become head of Interpol. That's headquartered in France. That would be the second successive country. And he reigned in that strategically powerful position for 4 years until 1972. I think he died in that year. But anyway, that's the kind of key position that they were pursuing. The important positions in banking, chambers of commerce, labor unions, and so forth. Where, I mean, just think of what the head of Interpol has access to. the powers that he has to do certain things to individuals globally. Now, at this point, it's important to remember that Dickoff and McCloy and others are not the power elite themselves. They're really its agents, and they're not necessarily, therefore, familiar with what each other are doing. In other words, I'm not saying that McCloy may have been involved in the Nazi secret plan himself, because they have their own sort of avenues that they perform. The power elite, I would describe them as more like a puppeteer pulling the strings of its individual agents, you know, having McCloy do certain things and Dickoff doing certain things and so forth, in a coordinated manner. The power elite coordinates all these people to accomplish its overall objectives. So, but even though you may not say, well, McCloy was behind the Nazi secret plan, even though you may not say that, for sure, I believe that his position, McCloy's position in the War Department, given that no one in FDR's administration probably, quote, ever acted without having a word with McCloy, end quote, I use that in part one, and given McCloy's position as U.S. High Commissioner of Germany, those three things lead me to believe that it's doubtful that he was unaware of the rat lines and Operation Paperclip. Now the rat lines were escape routes that the Nazis used fleeing Europe at the end of World War II in order to get primarily to South America, but not just South America. They also got into the U.S., Canada, and the Middle East. You know, there's a strong connection with Middle Eastern, the Arab nations, and the Nazis during the Second World War. Now, what I suggest next is if you do a simple Google search for, quote, history of the Italian rat line, close quote. What you'll find is an April 10, 1950, a U.S. Army intelligence document that'll pop up. And in there you'll see that a Nazi intelligence officer named Richard Gehlen, G-E-H-L-E-N, he was employed by the CIA after World War II and headed what he called the Gehlen Org, like organization, O-R-G. And their purpose, they supported the Odessa, the word Odessa, capital O-D-E-S-S-A. That's not referring to, you know, a town. Odessa is an acronym for Organization of Former SS Members, SS meaning Nazi, you know, Himmler SS members. That's what Odessa stood for. So the Gehlen organization was supporting the Odessa network in their use of rat lines. And examples of prominent Nazis using rat lines were Adolf Eichmann, Klaus Barbie, and Joseph Mengele.
Now, don't forget Martin Bormann.
I was ending with Mengele for a purpose.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah, there's a lot of these jewels. And the reason I was in there with Mengele is, now, this is just an aside. If you're reading my article, you won't find this, but this is an aside. I'll probably put it in the notes.
For the coming one.
But I'm ending there with Mengele for this purpose. If your listeners go to the London Telegraph, go to the London Telegraph website, and maybe you can just do a Google search. I'll give you the title of this article. The title is Nazi Angel of Death, Joseph, that's J-O-S-E-F as in Frank, that's how he spelled it, Mengele, M-E-N-G-E-L-E, created Twin Town, in Brazil. Nazi Angel of Death, Joseph Mengele created Twin Town in Brazil. And that's an article by one of the Telegraph reporters who's down in Buenos Aires, Nick Evans is his name, is January 23rd of 2009. Now there's two things about this this particular investigative report. It shows a picture of all these twins there in that little town. To make a long story short, what you find is that Mengele was down there, and you know, after they nab Eichmann, he's sort of fleeing, and he adopts another name. He calls himself Rudolf Weiss, W-E-I-S-S. And he, you know, goes across the border to Brazil, and he shows up as a vet, you know, taking care of cows and such. But he also offers his free services to women. And he's got these special little medicines he gives them. And lo and behold, today, and this is a picture of, you know, now these, this town, they have 1 in 5 are twins. Across the world, it varies, but on average, 1 in 80 births, pregnancies is a twin. In this town, it's 1 in 5. I don't think that's by coincidence. So what Mengele was really up to, if you remember, he was like the resident medic at Auschwitz from May of 43 to January of 45. And he takes off, and he's supposedly developing this master race, you know, for the Third Reich, the blue-eyed Aryans, and so on. Now, all of these little twins, they just happen to have blonde hair and blue eyes, too. It's not like, you know, the typical Hispanic twins. They're very special twins. Now, you have to ask yourself, and this article doesn't go into that, but I have to ask myself, why would he do that? Well, okay, you know, for the third, okay, well, Hitler's dead. So I'm going to pose this question. Could it be that this effort was part of this secret Nazi plan, you know, 2 generations later? Think about it. Succession. And not only is he creating these twins, and think of the usefulness of twins in a secret Nazi plan. You know, one person becomes such and such, and then the other one substitutes for him, you know, at some point. Sort of like the boys from Brazil, the movie that came out. But not only that, this is back in the 60s. And he's there, you know, doing his little veterinary thing with the cows and so forth. And he's saying, well, you know, I can have artificial insemination here. But he says something very interesting. He says, I could do it not only for animals, but for humans. Now think about that. That's long. This early 60s is long before artificial insemination of humans becomes a common practice elsewhere in the world. So now think of those possibilities in terms of the secret Nazi plan for a succession, you know, 2 generations, inseminating key people. And my guess is he's not just down in this Brazilian, you know, town just for the fun of it. And not just doing this for, gee, you know, in my dreams, I wish we could, such a, but he's probably in contact with other scientists all over the world through the, you know, Operation Paperclip. He's probably doing a sort of town experiment, and he's forwarding that information to these people.
But I think really we have to understand that is that, I mean, from a logical point of view, how could anybody be doing this sort of thing? There is a powerful spiritual force behind
sure.
this whole thing, this whole Nazi movement. It's alive and well in America today. In fact, at the Yale University, at the home of the Skull and Bones, they have Nazi swastikas all over the walls. They sing their Nazi songs. You know, they go around robbing graves, you know, like these Skull and of Geronimo they have there, I think it is, or is it Cochise? It doesn't matter. But I mean, these are really bizarre sorts of people, but they become presidents of the United States. They hold key positions in every aspect of our government. And they're simply one part of this brotherhood of darkness, of this occult brotherhood that permeates every aspect of our lives, and actually supported, you know, the Nazis in South America. It wasn't that the CIA knew where all these people were. They knew exactly where they were. But the only reason that they, of course, got Klaus Barbie and Adolf Eichmann was that the Jews tracked them down. But they certainly didn't get any help from the Central Intelligence Agency, who were doing everything they could to conceal them and help the Nazis. That's what's so hard for the American people to understand. And you need to get, of course, our 4-tape set on Operation Paperclip. And, of course, the book we carry on the Nazi doctors. They were the Nazi doctors the CIA doctors. But they were working in conjunction with the Nazi doctors who were brought here under Operation Paperclip.
Right. Not only did they become allegedly conservative presidents, they become liberal opponents from Massachusetts simultaneously even, by coincidence, I'm sure. But back to this particular article on Mengele by the Telegraph. This Telegraph writer is simply writing this as an extraordinary find and discovery by this researcher, and he goes into the interviews he has And this medic, Rudolf Weiss, keeps showing up with this town, and he's going from house to house, knocking on doors, attending women who have varicose veins, and giving them a potion, which he carried in this little bottle, and tablets, which he brought with him, and so forth. And he says, and everyone remembers he used to take blood. He used to take blood. Now, think about that. Now, this guy writing this article has no, you know, he would have no clue about what I'm talking about here. But what I'm saying is, not only is this interesting in and of itself, but what if this is part of the larger project of the secret Nazi plan? To take blood, to have artificial insemination, to pass that along to his other contacts in all the countries of the world, to use for a specific purpose, for the succession in two generations of certain individuals who will do certain things now. I'm just putting that out as a possibility. I don't think this guy was just playing scientist down there. So anyway, that's my secret Nazi plan part two, where I mentioned Adolf Eichmann, Klaus Barbie, and Joseph Mengele. All right, continuing that, at the end of World War II, a secret intelligence operation, it was codenamed Operation Paperclip, brought hundreds of Nazis and Nazi scientists to the U.S. and in other places. And some parts of the operation may still exist today. That's important to remember. Some parts of these still exist today, Operation Paperclip. And the operation was under what was called the Joint Intelligence Objectives Agency. That's the JIOA. Now, beginning in 1948, the JIOA also began what it called Project National Interest. And that, in turn, brought Nazis to the U.S. to work in universities or as defense contractors. So that's, you know, a subset here. Now, the reason I'm mentioning this Joint Intelligence Objectives Agency is this isn't just some little office somewhere in the Pentagon. John D. Rockefeller III, now think about this, big money guy, big banking guy, internationalist. John D. Rockefeller III is a naval lieutenant commander from 1942 to 1945, 4 years, and he's a member of the State War Navy Coordinating Committee. The SWNCC was formed, as I think I mentioned before, in December of 1944 as a precursor of the National Security Council. And the SWNCC was headed by John J. McCloy. And it approved an expanded version of Operation Paperclip. And that expanded version brought about 1,000, roughly 1,000 German and Austrian scientists to the U.S. in the, quote, interest of national security, end quote. Now, you can do that if you log on and see SWNCC, that State War Navy Coordinating Committee, document 257/22. Now, according to a book by Linda Hunt, The Secret Agenda, that she wrote a long time ago, about 18 years ago, 1991, some Nazi scientists, and she mentions a couple, Siegfried Ruff and Hermann Becker Freising, quote, were employed under Paperclip, Operation Paperclip, to continue the same type of research that had resulted in the murder of Dachau prisoners, end quote. So it's not just, you know, well, here's a scientist, you know, let's see what he can do. They were specifically given the assignment of continuing that type of research. Werner von Braun, in the area of NASA and space science. He was a leading NASA space scientist here in the 1960s. He wasn't just, well, oh, look, there's a scientist. He had been a major in Himmler's ruthless SS. You know, your average person just didn't say, hey, you know, I'm a member of the SS. These were very elite people chosen for a very specific purpose by Himmler. Well, Werner von Braun was one of them in the SS, and a major, you know, not just a, you know, sergeant or something. Convicted Nazi war criminal Otto Ambrose came to the U.S. as part of Project National Interest. And he worked as a consultant to W.R. Grace and Company for decades. Interestingly, Ambrose had been a director of I.G. Farben. And one of the things they manufactured was that Zyklon B. That's the gas that killed millions of Jews and others. Ambrose was also one of those released by, you know, who else? U.S. High Commissioner of Germany, John J. McCloy, in 1951. You know, he was releasing all of these wonderful people. Nazi Major General Walter Dornberger commanded a missile base at Peenemünde, in World War II, and under Operation Paperclip, he becomes vice president of Bell Aerosystems in Niagara Falls, New York. You know, they're getting really nice jobs, highly paid. Well, the list goes on and on, but the point in all of this is clear that McCloy and Rockefeller, they're with this, you know, this State War Navy Coordinating Committee, both of them, in this strategic position, they have, in my opinion, they have to be aware of the high-profile Nazis who had been helped to escape to the U.S. at the end of World War II. And one, I say, can only wonder whether these Nazis might have been in contact over the years with those other Nazi agents who early in World War II spread throughout the world in order to fulfill today the secret Nazi plan mentioned at the beginning of my article. I hear the music.
You do? Well, you hang on there. Basically, ladies and gentlemen, most people have never heard of Paperclip. Your reason you haven't is you're not supposed to, because they control the media, but we have an excellent 4-tape set on it. You won't find it elsewhere, but also you can go up on the Internet. I want you to check out and make sure what we're telling is the truth. Go to a start page and look up Operation Paperclip. We're trying to get away from Google because, of course, they're collecting dossiers on everybody who uses them. And then, of course, we'll be back in just a moment here to wrap up our program, but it's always fascinating when we have Dr. Dennis Cuddy on with us. Well, Dennis, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program.
Okay. Well, once again, I think what I'll do is, since this isn't in the article, I'll probably put a note or something at my next column about that, because it's like putting the pieces of this puzzle together. You have this project. You have the rat lines. You have to link them to Operation Paperclip. You have to understand about Paperclip and its expansion. The expansion, it started out small, they expanded. You have to understand John D. Rockefeller III and McCloy being at the strategic point with the State War Navy Coordinating Committee to implement this thing. You have to then put all of that together with the secret Nazi plan. And you have to think, not just about Mengele. You know, here's a guy who escapes. Oh, my goodness, you know, I escaped. I think I'll go into obscurity and not do anything so nobody will find me. He doesn't do that. He continues this experiment. He goes to these, like, this small town. He's drawing blood from people in there. You know, everybody, whether you need it or not, well, let me draw some blood. You know, I've got a varicose vein. Okay, well, let me get some blood while I'm at it. And you have to wonder, given that he proceeded with this, and you have 1 in 5, and it shows the picture of all these people. You know, there's a massive number of twins sitting there in front of you. And they're all blonde and blue-eyed. So this isn't some, well, let's see if I can make some twins, right? I mean, he's not just making twins. He's specifically making blonde, blue-eyed twins. They're down in, you know, the heart of dark hair and dark eyes country. And you have to wonder, is he doing that for a purpose? Not just, you know, scientific, can I do it before I croak and then who cares because I'm here in isolation. But you have to wonder, was he communicating with some of these other people, the secret Nazi agents of the secret plan, as well as the Operation Paperclip types, all over the world, giving them the technological ability to do the same? Now, they, you know, say they were in, no, the Netherlands, in the U.S., in Costa Rica, you know, wherever. And let's say they don't have massive towns doing this, but they select individuals to do this as part of the two-generation succession. And don't forget, it's not just can I make twins, it's artificial insemination. They, you know, think about the consequences of being able to do what he did in all these countries of the world with a specific design through artificial insemination to create certain individuals who would be part of this plan. It really gets really, you know, science fiction and all, but this guy was way ahead of his time. And I don't think he was just doing it for kicks. I mean, the Nazis, supposedly Hitler's defeated, okay, we're done. No. They weren't done. He's carrying this on, I think, for a purpose.
Okay, we're out of time, Dennis. God bless, and thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoy our conversation with Dr. Dennis Cuddy. You really have to understand that There is powerful spiritual forces out here behind the Nazi movement. If you haven't, of course, gotten our 4-tape set on Operation Paperclip, you need to get it. We actually have a book written by Professor Sutton, The Best Enemy Money Could Buy, going into how we finance the Nazis, we finance the communists, we finance the North Vietnamese, but we can't let the American people know that. We have, of course, my interview with Professor Sutton. You'll actually see me talking to him, The Best Enemy Money Could Buy. And then, of course, we have the book, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. We even have Wall Street and FDR. You must understand that these people of great wealth were solidly behind the communist movement, solidly behind the Nazi movement. They wanted a war, a long and horrible bloody war, with the hopes at the end we would come up with a world government. So these items and so much more is available at Radio Liberty. My pamphlet on the Communist-Capitalist Alliance goes into the background of how we financed the communism from its inception, but of course we had to have an enemy. Why? So we could justify expanding the power of government, having a great military with troops stationed in 130 nations throughout the world, but we had to have an enemy. If you haven't seen my interview with Ambassador Earl Smith, he was the American ambassador to Cuba in 1959. He was a multi-billionaire. We went down, visited, spent a couple of weekends with him, and he actually tells how, it was the United States who brought Fidel Castro to power intentionally, knowing he was a communist. But you're never going to hear that. How the State Department, the CIA, brought him to power, and they knew he was a communist. And the President of the United States knew he was a communist, but the President was simply doing what he was told, going along with us. But the American people honestly think that Fidel Castro was our enemy. Well, if he's our enemy, why was it then that Janet Reno and Bill Clinton sent a 125-man SWAT team to Miami and actually kidnapped a little boy named Ellen Gonzalez, whose mother had died, so that he could live here in freedom? And they sent him back to Fidel Castro to build up Fidel Castro's certainly popularity, to build up his prestige, not only in Cuba, but throughout the world. Why would we do something like that? Well, so much of what goes on doesn't make sense, unless you understand the Brotherhood of Darkness. If you haven't read my book, you need to get it. That's the Brotherhood of Darkness. And, of course, our talk on the Forbidden Secret and so much more. Go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And then please go to remember our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. If you want to understand how they've created this whole financial debacle we're involved in today, with the idea of creating a collapse of our economy, impoverishing our people, and then utilizing us to bring us into a world government, get my November and December 2008 newsletters and my January 2009 newsletters. They're available at www.radioliberty.com. If you haven't laid in your supply of long-term food, if you haven't got yourself a Berkey water filter, I said, if you haven't laid in the health supplies you're going to need, because I think we're moving into a period of increasing chaos and crisis, I think that all these murders you're seeing, some fellow just kills, 9 people the other day. Some fellow over in Germany kills 15 people. Wanton shootings, a lot of this doesn't make sense unless you understand that a lot of these people are demonically possessed. And the Black Awakening is about to happen. If you haven't heard our interviews with Rush Dizdar, you need to hear them. And that's the Black Awakening. My interviews with Rush Dizdar has talked to many of these demonically possessed people who tell them about the chaos that lies ahead. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. We ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. So until Monday, may the Lord be with you.
listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
IRN USA Radio News, I'm Hope Duggar. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is heading to Mexico later this month. The State Department says the visit is meant to show support for the government's crackdown on drug cartels and underscore the Obama administration's commitment to helping. Republicans announced plans to keep a close watch on how stimulus money is spent. Here's correspondent Jerry Bodlander.
As the president was warning his administration won't tolerate wasteful spending, Republicans unveiled plans to put the stimulus under a microscope. This is Tennessee Senator Lamar Alexander.
Our goal is...